Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening.
Good evening.
So right now, today, we live and work in perhaps the most dynamic place on Earth. There's lots of money and lots of energy being spent on creating new products for business and for people all over the world, right here, where we live. We're right in the center of it. And if you drive north, just a few miles, you come to a famous world-renowned institution that is recognized as a leader in training new leaders to be the creators and the technical contributors to this disruptive environment that we live in. So when we look at what's going on and what's making it possible for the Silicon Valley to be so dynamic and so creative, if we look carefully, we see that the most important ingredient is not what we think. It is not the technical skill needed for the newer and increasingly complex products and organizations that we have here. It's not the technical skill. If we look carefully, we see that the vital element in all of this is leadership. And that leadership includes a vision to recognize and anticipate and foresee what the needed, what the future need is. Another element of leadership is to keep the very highly intelligent and motivated people who are working here, keep them working together, all going in the same direction. And leadership is required to make sure that everybody is going in the same direction. And so we understand about these qualities of leadership. But today, in the world that we live in, we do need more than these traditional qualities of leadership. Because in the current world, in these days, technology and progress are not enough. We need to create a society that is wise enough to maintain a supportive environment for everybody that works here and lives here. This is a little bit different than the graduate school ideas of leadership. Because of the state of the world, because of the speed and the complexity and the dangers, today's leadership needs a spiritual dimension. So when you come to Zen practice and you decide to give it a serious try, when you sign up for Zen practice, you're actually signing up for leadership. And you don't know it at first, you don't know it at the time. But as you become involved in practice and as your practice continues to grow, your practice takes you there, takes you into the realm of leadership, a different kind of leadership. This kind of leadership doesn't mean you have to be in charge, like some manager somewhere. You don't have to have responsibility for some major project. The leadership that we need today, the new dimension of leadership that we need today, is based on who we are. Leadership is based on who we are, not just on how we are trained. If you are lucky enough and persistent enough to get your master's degree at Stanford, you are trained, you become trained in certain qualities of leadership. But the leadership that we need today isn't taught in such places. Spiritual leadership means we have to express our inherent fundamental qualities, our original nature. And we have to do it. We have to express our true nature without obstruction. This is our practice. And this sign up, you know, is not understood when you begin practice. But you come to understand it after a time. So when we talk about spiritual leadership, we're talking about expressing our true nature in everything we do. And this is not the same as the usual understanding of leadership. The usual understanding of leadership that is found in, you know, many, many areas of our society. The usual idea of leadership is associated with a kind of take charge attitude. Don't think of the military. Think of the quarterback on the football team. Take charge attitude. And in these environments, achieving a certain goal is vital. This is the whole point. Business or politics or military or sports. Achieving a goal is the whole point. But spiritual leadership emphasizes a different quality. And we refer to that as selflessness. And normally you wouldn't think of selflessness as part of leadership. It's not in the textbook. Because the assumption is that selflessness will get in the way of leadership. Some may say that, you know, you need a strong ego to get ahead. That's part of your leadership. Because you need to meet the deadline. Because you need to make the profit. So the feeling is that selflessness, a kind of morality, a kind of ethics, is too soft. It will get in the way. This is a kind of understanding. And why is that the normal belief? It's because the usual kind of leadership is associated with competition, where economic survival is at risk. So usual kind of leadership emphasizes a take charge attitude. But if we stop to think for a minute, a school teacher is a leader. A school teacher has to lead. And a school teacher leads through selflessness. A school teacher puts emphasis on the advancement of others, not himself or not herself. School teacher is concerned with how others are getting ahead. Or if you become the leader of a charity or some nonprofit, your emphasis would be on helping others to improve their lives. And concern for your own personal goals doesn't come into the picture. So we do have selfless leadership in our society today. It's just that it doesn't make the headlines that the Silicon Valley projects make. So if you are interested in spiritual practice, you're probably not interested in competition. You probably don't care much about the leadership qualities that rely on ego or of winning. If you are interested in spiritual practice, you want a different feeling than that. You want to avoid adversarial relationships. You want communal relationships where morality and ethics are very important. Many years ago, I went to a monastic practice period at Tassajara Monastery, 1973, before you were born. 3 month practice period at Tassajara, and I met many younger people, people younger than myself, who were very energetic, very intelligent, and I wondered why they were, and they indicated they wanted to stay there for as long as they could in the monastery. And I thought, how come they don't want to go back out and get on with their career? So I talked to a number of them about their feeling and their desires, and they were oriented differently than most young people. One young man I met who was very competent, very personable, very intelligent, and I thought he would do very well with a career in business somewhere. And he said to me, I don't want to make decisions. I don't want to make decisions. I thought, he's very good at making decisions, this fellow. Why doesn't he want to make decisions? But that's not exactly what he meant. He said, I don't want to be in that kind of environment. That's not who I am. I want to exert an influence in another way. I don't want to get involved in all that decision-making process. So true leadership is not just about competition. It's not just about winning. It is fundamentally about our determination to work for what we believe is important, to follow our vision, and to express our values. This is true leadership. There's nothing wrong, and there's nothing immoral, and there's nothing unethical about the usual kind of leadership that you can learn if you go to a place like Stanford. The usual kind of leadership requires the understanding of many things. Have to be able to see situations clearly and to recognize problems. Have to envision what to do and what is needed to do it, who needs to be involved, and the risks, the consequences of doing something or not doing something. These are the kinds of understanding we have to have if we take on traditional leadership role. This understanding of all these elements comes from paying attention. You know, you can't be a good leader if you don't pay attention. And paying attention requires the discipline of being fully involved, of being fully awake. And it also takes the willingness to work to resolve the roadblocks that may come up and to continue despite disappointments. And there's nothing wrong with these qualities. They are very admirable qualities. They too are part of spiritual practice. But complete leadership or true leadership understands the key leadership quality, which is not to be limited by ideas of personal gain. But instead to work on what is felt to be the right thing to do. And we see examples of this kind of leadership in all kinds of leaders. There's Mother Teresa, there's the Buddha, there was Gandhi, there was Lincoln. These are people who set aside their personal preferences for the greater good. So in Buddhism, leadership is expressed in various teachings. For example, we have the Eightfold Path: right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. And we have what are called the paramitas: charity, morality, patience, vigor, meditation, and wisdom. If we can put these teachings into action, then we have leadership with selflessness. It arises out of our practice. These qualities are expression of a kind of subtle, very subtle leadership. This kind of leadership says that, as you will know, by paying attention, you will know when to speak or when to be silent. You will know when to be direct or when to be indirect. You will know when to be present or when to be absent, when to be upfront or when to be anonymous. These kinds of subtle leadership qualities acknowledge and respect others, and they are based on selflessness. So our practice is about arousing and nurturing these leadership qualities. It is how we nurture and encourage ourselves and how we help others. So don't turn your back on these leadership qualities. That's a misunderstanding, and that cannot satisfy practice. So to be a leader in its true sense, you don't have to lead armies, and you don't have to lead great organizations. You don't have to create great wealth. You don't have to change political situations. You just have to be yourself. So the important point of our practice the important point of spiritual leadership is to practice selflessly without desire. Then you can develop leadership qualities that are spiritual in nature. Now, they don't teach it at Stanford. Not yet. Now, does anybody have a question tonight?
Can someone be a leader if they don't have followers?
The true leader A sincere leader doesn't count the number of followers. The true leader simply does what he or she believes is the right thing to do. So it's not the kind of question they would ask. And they may go to their grave never knowing. And they don't care. What about when people don't know what they want to do or should do? What's the role of leadership there?
In the Zen Center, we look around and see what needs to be done. And we try to do our part. Outside, it can be a little overwhelming to see what needs to be done in our community, in the country, and in the world. And you can get caught up wondering how many communities you're part of and what you really should be doing and using your resources wisely. So how do you decide about that and figure out how do you do your part?
We do what we can do. Don't worry when something is just beyond our reach. We do what we can do, and we do that which is most immediate. You know, so if you come out of the Starbucks some morning and somebody has thrown their paper cup down, we can pick it up. We can do that. But from there, it gets a little bit more complicated. But we start with that kind of attitude. If something is beyond our reach, we don't need to be upset that we can't reach it. We do what we can. We do what's within our reach. It's enough. Yes, Umar.
Anna, thank you for bringing that up. Remind me of a great woman by the name of Margaret Mead, the anthropologist, who used to say, when you're faced with that kind of a problem, you think globally, you have to act locally. So, and I was thinking about that when you were bringing that up, and I was thinking that's what we need to be doing most of the time. And last, thank you for the lecture. Brought to mind Zen mind, beginner's mind, and two things that Suzuki Roshi said. One of the things about leadership was, and it still just, I've talked to other people too, and it still blows my mind, that he said that if you want to control your animal or your cow, you take away the fences. You don't control it. And he said, if you want to lead, you always lead from the back, never from the front. Mm. And it was like so counterintuitive. It's like both those things are just so upside down that on some level that actually makes sense. And I was it just got me thinking of that and thinking, this is what comes out of practice. It's just looking at the world in a completely different manner.
Thank you. Now, if you believe it's the right thing to do, then you try to do it in wherever you can and whenever you can, and you recognize where they're not ready, and just have patience. I always come back to a personal experience I had when 20 years ago I was trying to create, I felt very strongly about bringing Zen practice into the workplace. And so I created a little class, and then I had to sell it. Oh. So I contacted a number of companies around here, and some I was successful. I got in the door. I'll never forget a conversation I had on the telephone with somebody who I managed to reach some mid-level executive, not just a first-level manager. And he really challenged me. He says, "Well, what's that all about?" "It's meditation at work." I said, "Well, people quiet down. They take a break. They see things clearly." He says, "Oh, no. Meditation, it'll put people in a zone. They will lose their focus. They will lose their ambition. They will lose their creativity. I don't have anything to do with that." And today, corporations know that meditation improves productivity and creativity. So it took a while. So we have to be patient and do what we can when we can and just wait a little bit, not worry about it too much. We just find satisfaction in small steps and don't worry about conquering the world all at once.
I think that there's a concept that has shaped American leadership, not just American leadership, world leadership, American culture, lots of things about leadership and the way it's understood in America. Profits is number one, morality is number two. That's the idea. Shareholder value is the most important thing in a corporation's life. And that's had pretty big consequences in the business world and American society. So my question is, what's a better idea? What's a better concept for the corporation?
To be of service. To be of service to the world that has given you the opportunity to do what you're doing. And not just focus on providing benefit to a relatively small number of people, you know, shareholders. That's pretty small number when you compare it to the whole society. So be of service to the whole society. And that includes more than a new product that provides some advantage. It includes more than that. And what it includes is something that I think we have to start working out. So University of Chicago, I think, is known to be quite conservative, isn't it? I really believe that the concept of the corporation has to change and is changing from its hundred-year. What shall I say? With corporations' reputation as a certain kind of entity, I think is beginning to change a bit, and it has to change a bit to accommodate itself to the the world. So, you know, recently some corporations have gotten in a little bit of trouble because they didn't take the big picture. You know, what will be the total impact of this service or this product? I think the notion of value added has to be re-examined. It's not just financial. It has to be something more. I'd like to think that there will be some people who will feel this way, some very articulate people who will feel this way and can start to change some minds. But anyway, that's a big deal. Thank you.
But my question was, if you're practicing selflessness, so I've experienced this quite a bit, you will often run into narcissistic, evil, belligerent, thieving, really yep. nasty, horrific people that can literally destroy your life and put you into years of PTSD. So how do you practice selflessness without being completely abused and to be able to maintain sense of self, sense of boldness, if not, and I don't want to say ruthlessness because that's what some people have been advising me in my work, like I need an edge of ruthlessness just to survive in the environment, but I don't really want to go that far, but I somehow want to maintain sense of self without being completely abused while practicing selfless leadership. How do you do that?
I think it starts with the understanding that somebody who's exhibiting those qualities, narcissistic or ruthless or selfish or you know, those kinds of difficult things, somebody who's exhibiting those qualities is probably suffering. And their suffering is bringing out these aggressive qualities. So if you approach them as somebody who is suffering, your relationship to them will be less defensive and more open. It'll be, let me understand this person. My understanding of them will help me know how to relate to them. So if we start, or if our relationship with somebody like that is purely defensive or counter-aggressive, it gets nowhere, you know. You start by being selfless and say, I'm going to listen and watch this person and see what makes them tick. Then maybe I can understand where all that stuff is coming from. And I will learn ways to accommodate to it. So it takes practice. It takes some, you know, a little bit of courage not to assume the defensive stance. And that's a part of selflessness. The more and more as we learn how to be that way, the better off we'll all be. So, not to minimize your concern or to sweep it away, it's a problem, but I think we have to try it little by little.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.